Welcome to the Friday Night Clive podcast with me, Clive Payne. In this podcast, we look back at the amazing charities, organisations and people we have chatted to over the past few months, all of whom have interesting and important stories to tell. This Sunday is World Mental Health Day. So what is this and what is it all about? Many organisations around the world will be marking the day, including here in the UK. And one such organisation is the Mental Health Foundation. Joining me on the line to talk about the organisation and World Mental Health Day is Rachel Baird. Good evening, Rachel.
Good evening, Clive.
Thank you very much. Not at all. Thank you very much for joining me. First of all, Rachel, tell me about the Mental Health Foundation.
We're a national charity. We're nearly 72 years old, and we work for everyone's mental health. We especially focus on what helps to protect people's mental health and prevent having problems, or prevent any problems people do have from getting worse. So very much about protecting mental health. We do research. We do. We offer a lot of free public information about how we can all look after our mental health, and we try to influence the government's decisions in ways that we think will be good for people's mental health in the UK.
What has been your experience of present and past governments being conducive to your suggestions and recommendations?
Well, that's a difficult one. I think I couldn't generalise by party, but you know, some governments and some individual ministers inevitably are more convinced of the importance of mental health than others. It really does vary, and it's very hard to generalise. I think one thing that matters is, how much does the government and the minister think that voters are going to care about what they do on mental health? That's important.
Sure. Tell me about World Mental Health Day then, Rachel, and what are its key objectives?
It's an annual event. It happens every year on the 10th of October, which this year is Sunday, marked in dozens of countries around the world. And you know, overall, it's trying to remind everyone, including governments, that mental health is really important to every single one of us all of the time, and that it's important we look after it and provide the sort of support and health services that are needed to do that.
How long has it been in existence? Is it something that's fairly modern, would you say, or has it been running for a long time?
Well, it's not as old as the Mental Health Foundation. It was started in 1992, which is almost 30 years ago.
And who started it, Rachel?
And I
should say,
it was the World Federation for Mental Health, which is completely independent of my organisation. It's an international organisation that was itself founded just after the war in 1948.
I'm with you. Do you know why they felt it was necessary for a World Mental Health Day to happen each year? Is there anything written in the history books about that?
I think the perception was that perhaps mental health was the poor relation of physical health, and that it really deserved championing, and, you know, people around the world to say, this is really important. We mustn't ignore it. This matters to everyone. We must properly support it with, you know, mental health and other services that help us all. It's a way of saying, don't forget about mental health.
Sure. Now, this year's theme is mental health in an unequal world. Tell me what you know about that.
Well, I think they're thinking about unequal world in various ways. I mean, one is the growing gap between the very rich and the poor, certainly in the UK, but also in many countries around the world. And, you know, being poor is bad for people's mental health. That's what the evidence shows. So that kind of inequality matters for people's mental health. The pandemic has made things worse. Our research suggests that some of the people worst affected by it were already disadvantaged even before the pandemic. And then there's the inequality, for instance, between spending on mental health services and spending on physical health services. I don't think there's a country in the world where mental health gets as much funding as physical health.
No, that's true, unfortunately. In your experience, while the pandemic has been going on, and it's still not left us now, unfortunately, but what kind of requests have you received from people or hits on your website? What sort of expectations have people placed on you that may be different from the norm?
I should say that we don't have a helpline, unlike some charities. So we're not getting, you know, constant calls from individuals saying, I'm struggling with this. But our research shows that, people have had all kinds of worries very, very naturally over the pandemic. For instance, about their own health, the health of their loved ones, the health of their children. They've worried about, in some cases, losing their jobs, having financial problems because of the pandemic. Even some people, you know, worried about having enough food for them and their families. They've worried about people dying. They've worried about being vulnerable because they've got an existing health problem. They've worried about how the situation is going to affect their mental health. A whole range of worries that, very understandably, a lot of people have had.
What happens around the world then, Rachel, and more so in the UK on World Mental Health Day?
Well, I think different organisations all do their own thing. But we are all reminding ourselves and each other and everyone about the importance of mental health. That's, excuse me, fundamentally what it's about. At the Mental Health Foundation, we are announcing a big, big chunk of new work in England, Wales and Scotland to try to support people who, the evidence shows, have had a particularly difficult time emotionally during the pandemic. We're particularly trying to reach lone parents, people who've got long-term physical and mental health problems, people from Black and minority ethnic communities, and people who are refugees. We're doing this with partner organisations to actually reach those people. And we are funding the work with both Mental Health Foundation money and also money from others, including especially a very generous support from one called the Monday Charitable Trust.
Right. Well, that's really good.
So that's our big news for World Mental Health Day. It's big. It's going to be more than £2 million worth of work that we already know about.
But that's all very valuable, isn't it? Because that will have, you know, a real positive effect for people. And, I mean, you know, how long will it take you to execute all that?
I'm so sorry, I've got a frog in my throat.
That's quite all right.
The timelines I've seen are in 1 to 3 years. So it's quite long-term work. And only yesterday I was hearing about potential new funding from, I better not say, but a large organisation within the UK. So I don't think that the final size and length of the programme, we call it the COVID response programme, the final size and length of it is not yet determined, but it is exciting, and we're really designing it to reach out to the people whose mental health has had the worst time during the pandemic.
Now, you mentioned when we began talking that you're a national charity. How are you funded?
We don't get any money at all from the government, which is a good thing, I personally think, because...
Why?
It means, well, it gives us independence. I have worked for another large charity, which I won't name, which got a very significant chunk of its total budget from the government, and it did make us more careful about what we wanted to say in public and how critical we felt able to be. And we don't get funding from the UK government, so that gives us an ability to speak out when we think it's necessary. Well, I should say, actually, we have got some funding from the Welsh government for the COVID response programme that I've just mentioned. Mm-hmm. But in being more constructive, most of our funding comes from individuals, very generous members of the public, mm-hmm. People giving a whole range of different amounts from, you know, tiny to huge. We get funding from some companies, mm-hmm. from some grant-making organisations, such as, I think, the National Lottery has been a great help. So a range, but not the government.
Right. Do you think, Rachel, in your professional experience, there is enough help out there to support people with mental health issues?
I don't. I don't. That I constantly hear very worrying, disturbing stories about the kind of weights that people are having, the kind of crises that people are getting into before they're able to get any help. And sometimes, you know, the very small amounts of help that they do get, even when they reach the top of the waiting list. But I'd also say that, you know, at the Mental Health Foundation, we passionately believe that, you know, yes, the NHS is vital and does need more funding for mental health services. And it's really important to try to prevent people, excuse me, getting to the point where they need professional help with their mental health. There's so much that government, companies, local councils, all of us can do to protect our mental health, to look after it, so we don't get into crisis.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
It does. And I think the problem, if I dare use that word, the thing with mental health is it's hidden. It's one of those hidden things.
Yeah.
And if you're a good actor or actress, then you can go about your daily life and you are perceived by other people as you're okay. But actually, deep down inside, you're fighting a multitude of battles of all sorts of things that are known only to you. But we just seem to be so afraid to talk about problems and to talk about our mental health issues. And I'm just wondering whether that's down to the stigma that surrounds it, or we just genuinely do not know whom to turn to.
I think it's probably both of those things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the research I've seen suggests that there is still a stigma, a kind of fear that we'll be judged and rejected if we talk about our mental health with other people. There is still a stigma for a significant proportion of people. I think some people don't really know how to talk about how they're feeling. I think some people worry about burdening others if they talk about how they're feeling. I think to some extent it's just a sort of maybe a generational thing. My personal impression is that younger people are more comfortable than older people, as a massive generalisation, talking about how they are feeling. And I want to say I do think it's changing. You know, I do think younger people are changing things. And also, we've seen a lot of famous people, sports people, celebrities, even members of the royal family and so on, talking about what they've struggled with.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe I'd like to think that gives us all permission, perhaps makes it easier for us to say, actually, I'm really feeling quite wobbly today, or, you know, I'm very, very stressed or anxious or afraid or whatever it is. I want to say, you know, we all have mental health all of the time. As you say, it is hidden. It's not like having a broken leg, but we all have it. And so there's nothing to be ashamed of.
Absolutely not. I mean,
we all have it.
I've said on this program when we've talked about mental health in past years, and I've been quite open and honest that, you know, I have mental health issues in the sense that I have acute clinical depression. And that came as a result of a bereavement when I lost my mum about 16 years ago. And once it happens, it never leaves you, and you have good days and bad days, but you have to find a way of managing that through. For people who have very bad days, and they may choose to seek professional intervention. For me, I can manage it, and touch wood, I don't take medication for it now. But that's not the case with everybody. But it was down to a couple of friends of mine who were helping me clear out my... Because I'm an only child, and they were helping me clear out my mum's house after she died.
Yeah.
And my friend said to me, "Are you all right?" And I went, "Yes, I'm fine, thank you." And his wife turned around and said, "No, you're not." And I said, "No, I'm fine." I said, "I am just a bit tired." And they said, "You might have depression. Go and see your doctor." And I did. And I spoke to my doctor about it. And I was bold enough to make that first step because I thought, well, nobody else is going to sort this out. Nobody else is going to encourage me to take that next step because, you know, I don't have anybody else. And I thought, right, I'm going to the doctor. I'm going to sound the doctor out and see what he says. And he identified it straight away and put me on a course of medication. And I think people are scared of taking medication, but it is there not to fix the problem, but it is there as a springboard to help you. And I think sometimes people perhaps say, oh, well, you know, I don't want pills. I don't want tablets. Well, no, nobody wants to take tablets and things. But I think... from my experience, it is that springboard, that jump start that you need because that then adjusts the chemical composition within your brain. And it does give you that feel-good factor. But it does help you, I think, to manage things and to be more honest with yourself and take steps to improve whatever needs improving. Sometimes you can't improve things. It might be something that you have no control over, but it does help you to manage that a little bit better than, you know, if you can't take total control of it. I mean, touch wood, I haven't taken tablets for, 3-4 years now. But I have good days and bad days and, you know, it's just how it goes with me. But I think people have to, you know, be honest with themselves. I think you're right in the sense that there is this stigma and the problem is it's hidden. But I think we also have to be prepared to be good listeners to each other. Because, you know, some people, I think from what I've seen, I don't know what your thoughts are on this, but I've seen people perhaps who have been struggling and have tried to talk to somebody and they've diluted it straight down. And I'm thinking, no, just take a moment, just take a step back and listen to what this person's saying.
Absolutely. Really allowing somebody else to say how they're feeling, to say that what they need to say, to give them that space to just listen and not tell them what the answer is or tell them what they should do or tell them they're wrong. Just to let them talk is so precious. To actually give them your attention is such a precious thing. And, in some cases, it could save their life.
Yes.
It's really profound. And I'm very moved by what the story you've just told, and I'm very encouraged that your friend supported you and you felt able to consult your doctor, and he supported you, you got the help you needed, and now you are managing okay, and of course, like everyone, you have good days and bad days. So do I. So do we all. But it feels like you took action. It can be so easy to be hopeless and get stuck in a terrible situation for a really long time. And it's really encouraging to to hear, inspiring to hear, that you were able to, with the help of your friends, to move forward.
That's right. That's right. Now, the Mental Health Foundation has recently released the results of a new study on public mental health advice. Tell me about that, Rachel.
I've worked at the foundation for several years, and this is my favourite piece of research that we've ever done. It offers 14 pieces of advice about how to look after your mental health. And how did the researchers come up with those tips? They did three things. They looked at the research evidence in, proper academic research journals. They talked to mental health experts about the evidence they found in the research journals. And then they took a load of suggestions about what's helpful for mental health. They took the expert suggestions to a panel of members of the public, many of whom had had their own struggles with mental health. And the researchers said to the members of the public, what of this advice, these tips, do you think would be helpful? And also realistic, are people going to follow this advice, or is it just too difficult? So that's how the tips were generated. Mm. And would you like me to tell you what they are?
Please.
Goodness me, I'm just coming to the right page. Here we are. So this is in order of importance, according to the research. Be aware of using drugs, that's illegal drugs, to cope with difficult feelings. Number two, build money skills and seek financial support if you need it. Number three, get more from your sleep. Number four, develop awareness of your feelings and emotions. Number five, have something to look forward to. Number six, get close to nature. Seven, speak to someone you trust for support. Eight, stay curious and open to new experiences. Is that enough, or would you like me to
give me another two more, because I'm jotting these down. These are rather interesting.
Okay. So number nine is have a healthy diet, because we do know that looking after your body is good for your mental health. And finally, number 10, help others and contribute to something bigger.
Super. Now, I've just been jotting those down. It's interesting that, are those in any particular order, or are they just as they've come out of the study? Because it's interesting that illegal drugs is the first one.
They are in order. They're in the order I just read them. So according to the study, the most important thing that anyone can do is be careful about using drugs to cope with difficult feelings. So, for instance, if people are feeling very anxious or very sad or lonely, be really careful about trying to cover up those feelings or get rid of those feelings by using illegal drugs. That's what we're trying to say.
Sure. Now, you see, it's interesting because there's two of my things on there, one is nature, because I'm fortunate I live in the countryside. And so I can go out and have walks and things like that, and that does me good. Actually, another thing that isn't on that list is animal interaction. Animal interaction for me is really good for me.
Absolutely.
Can't explain
why. I think
we would
include animals in nature.
Oh, well, yes, I suppose you can, can't you, nature? Yes, yes, you can. But, you know, they're really good things. I mean, sleep is so important for our mental health. We don't get enough sleep. I'm jolly sure I don't.
Right.
You know, because, you know, doing what I do, it's sometimes late nights and early mornings and funny hours and things. You know, those are really, really good ingredients to take into consideration, aren't they?
I think so. Like I said, I'm truly, genuinely excited by this research, because it's It's so practical, and it's been so carefully researched that, you know, it's been published in a peer-reviewed academic journal. So, you know, proper, serious, rigorous research. This isn't just back-of-the-envelope stuff.
Sure, sure. If people want to find out more, Rachel, about the Mental Health Foundation, where can we go?
So, our website is www.mentalhealth.org.uk.
Easy one. So, mentalhealth.org.uk.
Yes.
Superb. Rachel Baird from the Mental Health Foundation, thank you very much for talking to Friday Night Clive. That is your lot for this episode. You can catch the programme live every Friday night on Black Country Radio from 8 p.m. If you like our podcast, please subscribe by heading to blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcast or wherever you get your podcasts from. See you very soon. This is a Black Country Radio podcast presented by Clive Payne and produced by Andy Caddick.